Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Jason Kebler has a big-time job these days as the founder of the news site 404 Media. But in his heart, he's a reporter. He digs into stories. He describes himself in his bio as someone who loves Freedom of Information Act requests and surfing.
I do. I do love those things.
What have you been FOIAing recently?
So I've been FOIAing a lot about pickleball.
Pickleball.
Yeah, the fights that it's been causing all over the country.
What are you hearing about? Like, how many FOIAs are we talking about here?
For pickleball, I filed 25.
25 different cities.
25 different cities and towns.
At this point, you might have a few questions. First off, why pickleball? The answer to that has to do with this growing sport's aggressive lobbyists who are tying local governments up in knots. When he started his research, honestly, Jason did not know too much about that. He just knew what was happening down the block.
Yes. So I live near a paddle tennis court, which I did not know what paddle tennis was, but it's basically tennis, but on a small court. And I was walking by these paddle tennis courts and I saw this big sign that was like, pickleballers go home or pickleballers not welcome here. And I was like, what? Like, what is going on? Like, I thought that people were playing pickleball here all the time. But what happened was that pickleball players were like sneaking onto the courts when they were open, and they were playing pickleball when this was supposed to be a court for paddle tennis only. And when I saw that sign, I was like, oh, I bet these people, I bet there's like some, I always think how real life interacts with the government. And I'm like, I bet these people are complaining to the government about the pickleball people.
It turns out these people were complaining a lot, and not just in Jason's neighborhood. The city of Dallas told him it had more than 100,000 emails mentioning the word pickleball. They couldn't even begin to forward them all. The city of Fort Lauderdale said it would need $10,000 to produce all of its pickleball discourse. I think one of the emails was titled Pickleball Drama.
Yeah, this was at the end of like a 14 email chain between a local resident and the parks department. It was like a coworker venting to another coworker and forwarding the entire email chain and just being like, FYI, pickleball drama. Like, don't know what to do with this.
These emails are about who can take up public space and whether pickleballers are taking up too much of it. And if you're thinking, who cares? Jason says the fight over who can take up space in this country, it's kind of at the heart of the whole American project.
I've filed a lot of what I would say started as frivolous Freedom of Information Act requests in my career. And it's just like, I think that in sort of exploring the absurd, we can learn more about how government works and you can take sort of like larger lessons from it.
Pickleball is a Trojan horse for you.
It is. I mean, I really went into this. I was like, I want to see completely unhinged emails from people. I found thousands.
Today on the show, what Jason's overflowing inbox can tell you about how the government's working right now and who it's working for. And pickleball. We've got a lot to say about pickleball. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, I'm going to assume you know about pickleball by now. But on the off chance you do not, Jason Kebler says, just imagine a Diet Coke version of tennis. It's slower and smaller, uses paddles instead of rackets.
It's honestly like a mix between ping pong and tennis, but played on a small court. Like you're running around, but you don't have to run that far.
Yeah, one Washington Post columnist, a guy who hates pickleball, said that players have to defend an area the size of a rug, which little side eye there from the tennis community.
Yeah. While I don't play tennis or pickleball. I have played, but I don't play I'm not a player.
That's how you avoid bias in a story like this.
Exactly. Yes. An impartial person here. But over Thanksgiving, I was about to publish this story and I went to a family Thanksgiving and I started talking to people who I know who play tennis. And I was like, do you know about the pickleball drama? And every single tennis player that I've told this story knew exactly what I was talking about immediately. And there's this huge rivalry between tennis players and pickleball players. And the tennis players have this like huge sense of superiority because they see their game as a real sport where you have to be physically fit. Whereas one of the appeals of pickleball is that you don't have to run that much.
Pickleball has been around since 1965, which kind of surprised me because I'd only heard about it in the last few years. How did the sport start? But then also, how did this surge start? Like, what brought it on? Why is pickleball everywhere?
During the pandemic, people were looking for things to do outside. And I mean, pickleball just like really, really surged in popularity during that. There's a lot of like word of mouth, and then there's a lot of evangelism from pickleball players. It's like if you play pickleball, you want to get your friends involved in it.
You need people to play against.
You need people to play against. It's like my mom recently had a surgery, but she's like, the second that my surgery, like that I'm recovered, I'm going to play pickleball because all the other women in the neighborhood are playing pickleball. And I do think it's one of those sort of like word of mouth phenomenons.
And communities are spending real money to invest in pickleball. Like Washington, D.C. actually just set aside $750,000 in their budget for new courts.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons I wanted to do the story, because there's very few pickleball exclusive dedicated facilities for pickleball only. And one of the goals of USA Pickleball is to have communities build new courts. And they're sort of pushing all over the country to get these courts made at the same time when local budgets for public space are very low. And so I was very interested in sort of like how is this going to work? Because it seems like we build very few things in the United States anymore for the public good. And yet there's this really politically engaged community of pickleball players who want new facilities. So I wanted to see how that would play out.
I want to get into that, but I have one more question before we do. I was a little bit surprised to learn about the celebrity allies that pickleball has. Tom Brady, LeBron James, Drake. How are they involved in this sport and why?
I don't know how these people were initially introduced to the sport of pickleball, but you're absolutely right. There's these celebrity pickleball showdowns where, yeah, Tony Romo, Tom Brady, Gary Vaynerchuk, like all of these pretty famous people play pickleball against each other in tournaments in the same way that people play, you know, celebrity golf tournaments. And some of these are televised, and I don't know if you've watched any of them, but it's funny because the tournaments themselves, there's not that much sport happening, at least in these celebrity ones. It's mostly like trash talking because they kind of have so much downtime between points. They can kind of like yell and play at the same time, which I think is really funny.
Okay, so we've talked about pickleball advocates. I want to talk about pickleball haters. What do the pickleball haters hate so much about this sweet little sport? I mean, you've laid out a circumstance that does seem perfectly engineered to pit people against each other, which is a push to have more pickleball resources in space that's already being used for other stuff. So what are the people there complaining about? Like, what are their top complaints?
Right. So there's multiple groups of people who hate pickleballers. I would say that the original pickleball haters are homeowners and homeowner associations, because they say that the noise associated with pickleball, the plastic ball hitting the hard racket on a small court, like back and forth all day, they say that it is driving them crazy.
The noise is 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's just too much.
And there's been like multiple lawsuits from homeowners and homeowners associations against specific cities where they say that, you know, one, they're being driven insane, and two, they're worried that their property values are going down.
People get really dramatic about this. Like, there's a New York Times article about these lawsuits. Someone described it as like having a pistol range in your backyard. Then there's the question of land use. Like, you've talked about how tennis enthusiasts basically are just not having it from the pickleball people. Like, they feel like their courts have been usurped by this sport.
Yes. So this is actually what I found a lot more of when I was filing my public records requests. In Boston, for example, like, there's these courts called the South Street courts, and you could reserve them, and pickleball players had figured out how to book all of the slots for months on end. And so there were all of these tennis players saying, like, we simply cannot play tennis because pickleballers are here at all times. It's funny, after I published the story, I saw this tweet and someone said, how can you tell whether something is a tennis court or a pickleball court? And the joke is, a pickleball court has people on it. So the idea is that like, they're sort of just like spreading throughout these cities, taking up any blacktop, any concrete area, basketball court, tennis court, roller hockey court.
Pickleball, pickleball, pickleball.
Yeah, and the people who use these things to play basketball or tennis or roller hockey are very upset because they were used to playing basketball after school and now they can't.
Those people who figured out how to book all the courts, is that because they were especially organized or smart? I mean, I assume that the tennis people could also just go in and be like, I'm booking this until the end of time.
Yes. So I'm going to generalize here and stereotype. But pickleball players are far more organized than other players of other sports based on thousands of emails that I read. So there are these people in city after city who are these quote unquote pickleball ambassadors, and they are given a toolkit from this group called USA Pickleball about how to talk to local government to gain access to more public spaces. And USA Pickleball strategy is, here's what you should say to city council or the parks department or your local politician to convince them to build new pickleball courts. But because of this NIMBY aspect, where homeowners don't want pickleball in their backyard, it's really hard to build new pickleball courts in certain places. And so what is happening is pickleball players have to use already existing public infrastructure. So this means basketball courts, hockey courts, tennis courts, of course. And if there's a permitting system, it's like they're organized and they make sure how to like book out all of the permits. If there's not a permitting system, I saw emails where it's like, I will bring my net for crack of dawn to the tennis court and set up my pickleball net, and then we will play in shifts all day so that we keep the court and the tennis players can't get on here.
That's crazy.
And you compare that, you sort of compare the like USA pickleball toolkit and these ambassador, like organized pickleball players with the teenager playing pickup basketball after school. Like, he doesn't know how to lobby the government for a permit or whatever.
Well, and he's not expecting to have to. He's played at that basketball court for years.
Exactly. Exactly. And I saw a lot of emails from parents of teenagers who were like, my kid came home crying because he couldn't play basketball and he was expecting to. There was a lot of like, please fix this immediately emails.
After the break, one pickleball ambassador versus the city of New York.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
Okay, can we break down like one specific pickleball war and what you learned from it? I'm wondering if it makes sense to start in New York City just because I know people were especially organized there. Like, what did you learn about how the fights went down in New York?
So there was one specific pickleball ambassador in New York City who basically, I mean, this is what her job, it's a volunteer job, but this is what her job was. She would walk around town and look for sort of any uninhabited concrete space, take photos of that space, and then email the parks department and say, you could put pickleball court here. Like, here's a pickleball. It could go here. It could go here. It could go here. It could go there. It could go there. And it was just like picture after picture after picture of just like random stretches of concrete.
And this person like really cared about pickleball? Like, they're a player? Like, who, what? What's happening here?
This person was a USA pickleball ambassador. So a pickleball super fan.
That's not an official term. This person is not like going to the UN.
It's an official term in that USA Pickleball calls them ambassadors. It has a pickleball ambassador program. But no, they're not foreign dignitaries. But it is an official title from the USA Pickleball organization. And if you are a USA Pickleball ambassador, you get a USA Pickleball email address. So it's like you are quasi-officially a member of this, of the national governing body for the sport of pickleball, is what they call it. So this woman who, I'm not going to name her because she's just a citizen, but she is a pickleball instructor in New York City. So she wanted to like find places that she could both play pickleball and then teach students. It was her job.
Oh, so she had a financial interest.
She did have a financial interest, yes. So she put together a PowerPoint presentation that was like, it was just called Pickleball. And it had like a slide that was like history of pickleball, benefits of pickleball, pickleball court specs, stuff like this. And she had photoshopped a giant pickleball court on top of an existing basketball court with like dimensions on it. It looked like an architectural drawing, but it also looked like it was done in MS Paint.
Get some clip art in there.
Yeah, it was clip art. It really was. So she sent this to the Parks Department, was emailing the Parks Department pretty regularly. And the Parks Department was responding and saying, you know, like, we're going to try to solve this for you. Like, you're a constituent. This seems like a good thing. Like, we're going to try to find a place for you to play. And eventually they were given space to play that was next to like a blacktop and next to a basketball court. And if anyone has ever played any sport in New York City, it's like there's a lot of stuff going on usually.
Yeah. You don't have a lot of elbow room.
Yeah. And so there's this one email where the Parks Department is like, hey, we got a complaint that you took up more space than you were allotted. Like you were supposed to only play in this one section, but you were also playing in this other section where you shouldn't. Like, please stop doing that. And this woman responded and said, well, there was a kickball game happening and there was a dog with no leash on and there was a woman running with a stroller and a kickball like flew past my head. And there was a basketball player who was really rude to us. And I cannot believe that you are saying that we're the problem. Like, we're not the problem. And then there was like a back and forth between her and this Parks Recreation employee. And eventually she says, can I have your phone number to talk about this?
Oof, elevating.
The next email from that guy was like, you gave my phone number to everyone who plays pickleball. My office is getting flooded with calls. And he said that the pickleball woman told them that they were going to take away the pickleball court. And he was like, I didn't say that. It was inappropriate for you to say that. I've tried to help you, and now you're flooding my office with angry calls.
This is like aggressive advocacy. One thought I had when I was reading your reporting about this ambassadors program was that it sounds like a lot of work. You would need to have time to be a pickleball ambassador. And you'd also want to know how to pull the levers of power in government.
Yeah, so I'm going to paint with a broad brush again, but this is, again, based on reading real emails from real people all over the country. It's like many of the pickleball ambassadors are retired. Many of them are former lawyers, or they're people who were politically involved in some way. They have time on their hands, and they also, it's just like, generally true that older people are more politically involved. They go to more city council meetings. They have more time to do this sort of thing. And so it is the case that the pickleball lobby is so organized in part because it has like experienced people working on this issue. One thing that I found really interesting is that a lot of the NIMBYs who are arguing against pickleball are also older people.
So boomers are eating their own.
They are.
You know, your reporting on all this was just really fantastic, a great read, and the details were amazing. But I'm sort of curious to you what you came away with from it, because you're not a pickleball player. Like, why does it matter, these fights over public spaces?
Yeah, so I don't know if this is too lofty, but this is honestly what I think. It's like, one, I think public spaces and recreation are very important. I think that pickleball players should be allowed to play pickleball, and I think that tennis players should be allowed to play tennis, and I think that we should have enough public space for people to play whatever sport they want. Like, I don't have anything against pickleball, but I do think that if you extrapolate this out, there are documents that I got that it's like the average pickleball court costs about $10,000 to build.
That's not nothing.
It's not nothing, but it's also not that expensive. It's like often the pickleball players volunteer to raise that money and give it to the city in question. And even doing something as simple as putting a new patch of concrete on already on land that cities already own, it gets this resistance from homeowners where they're demanding that cities do noise assessments and economic impact assessments and environmental assessments and traffic assessments and all of these things. And it becomes really difficult to build a patch of concrete. Like it's the easiest thing I can think of. Imagine trying to build a new train line. Imagine trying to build a new apartment complex. And I really do think that this is one of the reasons why it's so expensive and so arduous and so difficult to build new things in the United States, because there are all of these sort of like organized groups that are trying to protect what they believe are their own interests and prevent anything from being built anywhere. And when that happens, we're all fighting over this like smaller and smaller public space.
Jason, I'm super grateful for you coming on the show. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Jason Kebler is the co-founder of 404 Media. And if you also appreciated his dry wit, please drop what you're doing right now and go check out the 404 Media podcast. Jason hosts it. And that's the show. If you're a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. Go on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to find out how. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, Paige Osborne, and Madeline Ducharme. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time. I'm sorry. I've never done this in an interview, but I find this so amusing. I'm like going to cry laughing. Okay, go ahead.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. Exploreminnesota.com/live.